Once again, Wahoo Nation out there, welcome back to Who's Talking on Sports Radio 910. This is Jim Hobgood and Frank Maloney. We're glad you've been able to join us this evening. And I'm going to turn it over to Frank for an announcement relative to a meeting tomorrow night.
Thank you, Hobbo. The UVA Club of Richmond has their annual kickoff party tomorrow night at T. Miller's at the downtown Marriott. The event starts at 5:30. There's no charge if you're a member of the local Who's organization. Starts, like I said, at 5:30. It's an open bar. They've got Dave Kane, the voice of the Cavaliers, will be there in attendance with a speech, trying to give everyone a little pep talk, I guess. And also Brad Soucy, the director of basketball operations, will be in attendance to give Wahoo fans a chance to hear a little bit about the basketball program and the exciting things that Tony Bennett has got in mind. For more information, go to richmondwhos.org or richmondwhos.com and learn more information about the event. But it should be a lot of fun. If you've never been to it, it's always a great time. And membership in the club is only $30 a year. So I encourage you to go out there.
And Mr. Maloney is a past president of this august body. And Brad, he was one of the assistant coaches that Tony Bennett hired. He was with Richie McKay at Liberty, and the two of them came as a package deal. And I know it's early, but some excitement starting to brew relative to Virginia basketball, which I guess gets underway November the 13th against Longwood. Do we have Ty on the line?
I think we're
not yet.
I think we're still working.
Still trying to still trying to get that. Frank, let's talk a moment about the TCU game.
Well, a couple things. First off, doing a little background work on TCU. They only lost two times last year. They lost to Oklahoma in a somewhat one-sided game. They lost a nail-biter to Utah, which is no embarrassment. Utah always has terrific football teams in the last 10 years. And then they won a nail-biter in the Poinsettia Bowl over Boise State. Boise State wearing those hideous blue uniforms that drive most fans crazy. We know that TCU has a veteran quarterback, and his name is Dalton. He's been there for, I think this is his third year at the helm. They've also got a very tough defense. Maybe the number one run defense in the country, which I'm sure Al Groh respects, being a defensive coach throughout his career.
Yeah, and they come in. It's interesting. 2 weeks hence, so on the 26th, they play at Clemson. So they have two ACC teams on their schedule, both on the road. And I think we do have Ty Lewis on the line now. Frank, why don't you introduce him to the listeners?
Well, we're very excited to have Tyrone Lewis here. He goes by Ty now. Ty played defensive back for UVA between 1987 and 1992. In fact, he was one of the team co-captains at one time. He also was the defensive MVP in the Gator Bowl back in 1992. Ty played in four bowl games. He currently co-hosts the UVA pregame show up in Charlottesville with Antonio Rice. I believe that's on WINA. Tyrone, good to have you on board. Glad you could be with us here on Who's Talking.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you.
Yeah, Ty, let me, we had Ahmad Hawkins on the show last week. He, I guess, is known as a receiver, but he also played some defensive back. And in his article in the Saber Edge, he made reference to the fact that the secondary on this year's team had the potential to be maybe as good as any we've had since the mid-90s. Now, based on the first game, they didn't play particularly well. How do you explain that?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to execution. And, you know, my thing is the first game of the season, no matter who your opponent is, be it a William & Mary, and we had some big-time opponents first games. We played Notre Dame in the kickoff classic in 89 and followed up with Penn State. In 88, we played Penn State, and we had a similar performance against Penn State that year in 88 where they came into Scott Stadium and blew us out. And one of the things that I remember vividly in that game is that we just didn't execute. And I remember Coach Wells kind of taking that loss on this show and said, look, it's my responsibility as a coach to have the players prepared. So when you see blown coverages, and I'm sure everyone saw the two long passes, one they hit on Rashad Dowling and the other one they just missed it on the same cornerback, Rashad Dowling, where the safety came up and they were playing some crossing routes and and not providing the help over the top that Rothschild Dowling thought he had. So whether it was, man-to-man or a man coverage with help over the top, they just didn't execute that the way we've seen UVA secondaries execute in the past. And I think, in my opinion, that comes down to coaching. You have to have your team ready to play to prevent those things, because you know teams are going to test you down the field, and William & Mary did that, and they hit a couple of them and missed some also. So it just comes down to not having your players ready, and also the players have to execute. And that just gets back to coaching.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up, and then I'll let Frank get in. When you say execution-blown coverages, is that a matter, do they call certain coverages? Is it a matter of communication on a particular play? How does that transpire?
Well, you hit it right there when you said communication. It's very important for the defensive backs to communicate. A lot of times you will have certain coverages will dictate formations that the offense come out in that will dictate a coverage that you will run. Or sometimes they will shift into a formation and make you check into a different coverage. I didn't see any of that, not a lot of shifting going on, so there was just not the communication coming out of the huddle, with the defensive backs. I remember myself when I played with Tony Covington, Keith McNeese, and Jason Wallace, I would put our secondary up against anyone. We've had some great defensive backs, with Anthony Poindexter and Rondé Barber and the Cook and Dowling now. But I think collectively, with that secondary that we had, we didn't make a lot of mistakes, and that was because we communicated so well. My last year, I played with Keith, with Greg Jeffries, Greg McClellan, and Keith Lyle, and two of those guys played in the NFL for a long time. And we just communicated. That was one of the big things about being a good secondary, just knowing where your help is, where your help is not, and where you need to be, and how do you all respond to each other from a communication standpoint. And a lot of times you'll have hand signals which will help you check into a certain defense and out of a certain defense. And I just didn't see that level of communication with the defensive backs.
Let Frank get in here with a question, Ty.
Ty, watching the game the other night, what positives can viewers and fans take away from that game, and what positives can they build on getting ready for a arguably a much tougher opponent coming into Charlottesville on Saturday?
Well, I think if you want to look at something positive, I think that the players, their mental state of mind, I think they can come in a better mental state of mind. I think what I saw from a UVA team, when we talk about execution, communication, both offensively and defensively, I just don't think that they were prepared to play a William & Mary team. A lot of times when you come out against a true, when you say Division I or football subdivision bowl team, like TCU, the players will be up, they'll be focused, they'll be ready to go. One of the things that Coach Wells constantly talked about is not losing focus, because when we played William & Mary, they always played us tough. And that's one of the things I warned in this game, that no matter, how big or how faster, how more aggressive we may be than William & Mary or Richmond or a JMU, they will come out and play the state schools, meaning Virginia Tech and UVA, very tough. So one of the things I think a positive that we can take away from this game is that I don't think that our team was mentally focused and ready to play William & Mary like we should have been. And I think that we will be mentally focused and ready to play against TCU, because now the microscope is on the program again, and players are going to come out and they will want to prove that what happened against William & Mary should not have happened.
Yeah, there's no question. This is a big game on Saturday, and it could certainly get things going back in the right direction. And, hats off to William & Mary. They are very well coached football team and had a lot of experience on that ball club. And the game this weekend is going to be televised by ESPNU at 3:30 for those that are not able to get to Scott Stadium. Ty, what do you know about the TCU passing attack?
Well, for a long time now, TCU has kind of flown under the radar as far as their offense or their team in general. They have a lot of team speed, and that's what that'll be evident when they come to Charlottesville, people will see a very fast team, offensively and defense, especially at the specialized position, being cornerback and wide receiver, running back. They have as much speed, from what I've seen in the past years, as maybe at Miami or Florida State, and everyone got a chance to see that speed on display two nights ago when Miami took on Florida State. So what we're going to see is we're going to see a very fast team. They're going to throw the ball around, and that's what they do. They specialize in that. So I think we have to put our track shoes on defense, and they're going to throw everything they have at us. I think for them, looking at the William Mary game, I don't know what they can take from that game, because I'm pretty sure I've been in that situation where you see a team that really is supposed to beat another team, and you're watching that film. Sometimes the coach just throws it out, and I would pretty much bet that TCU's coach would probably say, look, we look at it for what it is, but don't think you're going to go into Charlottesville and hand it to these guys, because they're going to come out and they'll be ready to play. But we're going to see a lot of speed from TCU, and that's what they bring. And I think we have athletes and the speed to match. We just couldn't put that on display the way we should have been able to against William Mary.
Yeah, Ty, I think Frank's got a quick question or comment before we let you go.
Ty, what do the coaches have to do on the defensive side of the ball so that they can get the ball back sooner and hopefully get a few turnovers instead of dropping those interceptions? I mean, Coach Groh, Coach Wilt, Anthony Poindexter, what do those guys have to do to get that defense rolling so that it gives some confidence to the rest of the program and shorten those time of possessions?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, the defense was put, and you talk about the drop interception against that Minifield had. I mean, he takes that back, and he has nothing but grass in front of him. He takes that back, and UVA goes up 21-10,
yep.
And there's no telling what goes on after that. What's the state of mind of William and Mary? Or, you know, they could have been like, okay, here we go. Now UVA is going to assert itself. We made a mistake. They capitalized. What do we need to do? And then they probably start pressing themselves to get back into the game. But I think the one thing I did notice, you know, when Coach London, when London had, Mike London had that defense, it was a lot more aggressive than what I saw against William and Mary. I saw a very tentative defense. I saw a defense that wasn't very sure of themselves. And that led to a lot of mistakes, some of the mistakes that we talked about when I came on. So I think we need to get the aggressiveness back in this defense. We need to have, some of the linebackers, whether it's Greer or Childs, you know, get some of those guys involved. And you need to, and we didn't get a lot of good line play out of the front three. So you got Nate Collins, you got Matt Conrad. These guys have gained experience, but Archer didn't. There was not a lot of pressure put up on Archer. He sat back there. He got a chance to throw the ball wherever he wanted to. So,
Going back to my charted plays, I noticed that a Virginia player did not touch Archer till about midway through the third quarter, and that was Burrell. Finally got a glove on him.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think the first person to touch Archer was his girlfriend after the game.
You're right on that. I'm standing up there on the hill with my binoculars watching his uniform. Besides the plays that he ran out of that spread offense, they ran the design quarterback runs. That's the only grass stains he got on his uniform, but it wasn't on the back of his number jersey, because we didn't lay a hand on him.
So when I went to the laundry, they didn't have to include his uniform. Huh?
No, they probably just hung it back up inside the locker room ready for the next game.
Hey, Ty, we better run here, but we really do appreciate your joining us. Wish you continued success on the pregame show, and we'll definitely have you back on our show before too long.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Thank you, guys.
Ty, take care, buddy.
Frank, before we go to break here, I just thought we might just touch upon the ACC. Not a particularly good weekend for the conference the first week of the football season. I guess Georgia Tech, Boston College, Clemson, North Carolina, and Miami, the league was 5-7 overall, and some of those five wins were not necessarily against formidable opponents.
Well, I was very surprised that Wake Forest lost coming out of the gate. I did watch the NC State game against South Carolina. They barely got any energy going during that game, and they made They made a little run towards the end of the fourth quarter, and Russell Wilson threw a nice ball towards the very end, but that was essentially a Hail Mary play, and I was surprised by that because Wolfpack was hosting that game, and I almost expected them to send Spurrier home with a big L, but it didn't turn out that way.
Well, probably the most compelling game of the weekend from the ACC was the Florida State-Miami game that cost me a little sleep on Monday night because I got interested and watched the whole thing. Obviously came down to the very last play that Florida State tried to convert, and the ball hit the ground so they didn't get the touchdown. But Miami and Florida State, I think, are starting to move back toward what the ACC hoped they would be when the league was expanded.
A little bit. I thought it was a little bit of a shootout, and, you know, there's bragging rights there. Not sure how that relates necessarily to the rest of the conference, and it remains to be seen if they're all the way back there. Their quarterbacks were a little wild at times, and I saw some things that kind of reminded us a little bit of our game in terms of some of the ball handlings. That sort of thing. But any further thoughts?
No, well, it certainly was a very entertaining game. May not have been the best football, but nevertheless a great game to watch from the standpoint of the TV audience. So we'll go back to break, our final break before the fourth and final segment. We'll be back thereafter with a little preview of TCU and Frank Maloney's UVA Fall Sports Update. Back after the break.